Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A third and final hour, late night, right here, Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we'll make our way together until 1 o'clock this morning. Room for you guys at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops, and currently have a little bit of a spring in my step, seeing that the Lakers are currently down 14 in the third quarter on their much hyped up opening night. And I nothing pleases me more than to see LeBron James and company right now a bit embarrassed on national TV after the hype train that surrounded that team in the offseason. It just makes me happy to see it not going perfectly, not going well for LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the rest of that collection of Los Angeles Lakers. So it is Sports Radio WEI, room for you, 617-779-7937. Let's grab another call here. Let's go to Mike. Mike's in North Providence. Mike, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, Patrick. Yeah, who was it that said that they only won 42 games?
It was one of the pundits on ESPN. They broke everything down. You know how they do, like their 12 guys, and that was their low one.
People that just run their yaps. I mean, this team's actually I think going to be easily north of 50, barring injury. I mean, one of the key things is just clearing out a lot of the kind of like roster clog of last season, putting into the hands of the better players. Like, you're not having Marcus Morris using up a bunch of touches and a bunch of shots. You know, you're not Kyrie was a ball stopper who kind of gotten everybody else's in the way of everyone else. He's like a great guy to have when you have like a couple stars and everyone else is a pure role player who takes like five shots a game.
That's why he was so good with Cleveland. It was he and LeBron, and everybody else was, you know, you're talking about J.R. Smith. We're talking about guys, a massive drop-off. And that worked for that team.
In that postseason, the guy who had like the fifth most shots on the team was just taking four shots a game. It was literally like, you know, LeBron and Kyrie taking 20 shots a game. I think it was like Love was taking 12, J.R. Smith was taking 9, and everyone else was 4 or less.
Yeah.
So everyone else plays defense and hits the occasional shot, and these guys just take them all. But on our team, we had so many guys that were actually capable of creating offense for themselves or scoring through the offense. We didn't need some guy just dominating the ball constantly. And as you can see in this preseason, Kemba's moving the ball very well. He's playing a very team-oriented game when he's out there. And yet he still has that ability to kind of hit that big shot and create for himself in a big moment.
But, Mike, you're a cerebral guy, so I'm glad that you called tonight, because you watch these games as a fan, but you're very analytic with the way that you approach basketball. So you brought up the preseason. Typically, we try not to read too much in, but something seemed to click with this team in the preseason. A, they were fun to watch. B, they moved the ball beautifully. And that led to wide-open shots for guys. Guys were able to make contributions because, quite frankly, the shots were easy. They were all wide open. Clearly, it's not going to be like that easy during the regular season. But did you learn anything, or do you think you learned anything about this team and what they can be throughout their 4-0 preseason?
Well, I mean, I felt that, honestly, a lot of the things we talked about last season were happening now. Like, for example, and people are noticing this, Brown and Tatum together. I felt last season it was almost like they were always apart on the floor.
They were, yep.
They're playing up-tempo now. Consciously, up-tempo, speed it up, play fast, which, once again, feeds right into those two, you know, and to the team as a whole, but particularly those two. That's going to benefit them a lot.
Yep.
Jaylen Brown touching the ball, I mean, it seems like twice as much as he did last year.
Yeah.
Whereas last season, they just stick him in the corner. You have to watch everyone. He's getting a high pick and roll. They're finding him a lot, just in general, but especially in transition. And he's very comfortable out there. And it's one of these things where, you know, people, you know, even Greenberg was just saying, it's like, oh, you know, will it be Tatum or will it be Brown? You know what? How about Tatum and Brown both being a lot better? you know?
Yeah, they can certainly both make a leap, Mike. You know, and for them to get a lot better, and for, I think, you still need Gordon Hayward to be 90% of what he once was, Mike. And the thing that he and I went back and forth on, and I'll be curious to get your thoughts, is, you know, you have to look at the loss of Al Horford. It is significant, but you look at this team defensively, and again, I brought this up in the first hour, I'll bring it up again, they were a top 10 defensive team before Al Horford got here. So I think that Brad Stevens could potentially scheme around the loss of Al Horford defensively, but I just have a hard time rationalizing losing a guy like Al after I defended him so much over the last few years and being okay with it. You know, being like, okay, they're not going to miss a beat, they're going to win 50 games, the loss of Al Horford's not going to matter. But it sounds to me like you kind of believe that.
Well, I mean, one of the things is, offensively, the simple fact, I mean, Kyrie gone, Marcus Morris gone, but even Al being gone, more of the offense is going to go through Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Gordon Hayward, which is just, you know, offensively, it's not going to hurt as much just because they're going to be more in the flow.
Yep.
And defensively, you know, one of the things I was saying to people recently is just when Jordan's Bulls played, they didn't have a great big man.
No, they had Bill Wennington. They had Cartwright. I mean, they didn't have that guy.
But what they did is they, and I know that Danny understands this, is they rotated like three playable guys out there.
Yep.
That was the key thing.
Will Perdue.
They didn't rely on one guy. They kept fresh bodies. And you know what? You're saying, oh, you know, Greenberg was saying, I'm afraid they're going to foul out our bigs. What? That's 24 fouls, buddy. They're not going to be fouling them out. That's the last thing you need to worry about. Those are four playable guys that can go out there, and they can just keep on cycling fresh bodies in front of somebody like Embiid. Now, the thing is are you going to go and defeat Embiid? Well, you know what? The bigs did not try to defeat Patrick Ewing for the Bulls. What they did is they just looked to wear him down, take some of his edge off, keep fresh faces in front of him, and then the other guys won the game. And I think that that's exactly what they're going to try to do here. And when you brought up Golden State, that's a perfect example. You can kind of play small if you play the right way. And you know another thing, too? I think people misunderstand size in the NBA. Just as the Celtics can play a big lineup in the backcourt, that's exactly what Golden State did. What made Golden State's lineup work was having Klay Thompson at shooting guard, because having that size in the backcourt offset being a little bit small in the front court. That's why I found.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. Listen, Mike, I appreciate the phone call. It's great stuff. And you always have a little bit of spring in your step, Mike, when we talk Celtics. And I can appreciate that. This is just, again, you go into the season with all these questions, and they are questions. Even the most optimistic Celtics fans can't convince me that each one of these questions is going to turn up with the right answer. And if they do, then I'm with everybody. This team's ceiling is very high. It might be the NBA Finals, and I think that they have a real chance to get there. But I also know, as a guy that's been on this planet for 39 years, that if you go into any sporting season with a handful of questions and you say to yourself, okay, if all of these questions are answered positively, then your team is going to be great. That's the scenario in which we're entering this Celtics season. Do I think that these things are going to happen? Well, I think that Jason Tatum and I think that Jaylen Brown are likely going to take their next step in their progression. Last year, we can all agree, they took a step back, whether it was their fault, other players' fault, whether you want to blame it on Marcus Morris, blame it on Terry Rozier, blame it on Kyrie Irving, it doesn't make a difference now. It happened. So now this year, they've got to get back to that progression that they were making 2 years ago in the conference finals. If they can do that, if Gordon Hayward can look somewhat similar to what he used to be, then I'm very confident with this team's ability to win north of 50 games and be a true contender in the Eastern Conference. And back in the studio now from WEI.com is WEI.com's Nick Fryer. And Nick, you know, talking to Mike here and talking to optimistic Celtics fans, you've got yourself at 50 wins. Greeny's got them at 49 wins. You know, I've got them going to the NBA Finals, and I was going to wait to the last segment to get there, but it's funny. I've got them going to the Finals. I've got them going to the Finals, if only because, not because they are going to win 55, 58, 60 games, okay? I don't have them doing that, but I think in the Eastern Conference right now, look at the conference. Not for nothing, I'm watching this game right now, and I'm watching Kawhi Leonard do his thing with the Clippers. That team in Toronto last year was head and shoulders better than anybody else the Eastern Conference was putting out there. You look at Milwaukee is a very good basketball team, but they weren't as consistently great as what Toronto was in the postseason. Toronto, as the postseason went along,
yes,
they got better and better and better.
Absolutely.
Okay, Milwaukee has the best player in the conference. There's no getting around that.
Right.
But his supporting cast is still, there's some questions there. Not for nothing, that's a team that everybody was talking about the return of Brogdon. Well, Brogdon came back, and now he's gone. He signed elsewhere, mm-hmm. and they did not replace him. You can't tell me that, you know, Eric Bledsoe and you know, Chris Middleton are going to be the two guys that you lean on game in and game out to get you to the NBA Finals.
Do you like Brogdon more than you like Middleton?
Yeah, I think he brings more defensively. I think Celtics fans are a little, there's a misconception about Middleton because of how much he torches the Celtics. So
he
kills the Celtics, and he has for
he's
years.
He's still an all-star, though, Gilroy.
He's an all-star. He's a great shooter.
Yeah.
But I don't see that team as a team that's unbeatable. So you go, you look at
that's
the,
fine. They're not unbeatable. I agree with you.
Look at the way that we looked at a team like Golden State over the last 3 or 4 years. Mm. They were always considered unbeatable. You steal a win here, steal a win there in the regular season, but they were a horse in the postseason. Virtually unbeatable. We're talking about the Eastern Conference right now, where I can name, we've talked about all these potential holes in the Celtics. Well, I can do the same thing with Milwaukee, and I can do the same thing with Philadelphia. I'm relatively comfortable giving the Celtics a fighting chance against those two teams. And there's a massive drop-off because of the injury situation right now with the Pacers. They're not a complete team right now, so I don't think this will be the Pacers' year to make their leap. I think that comes next year. They're just not going to be whole soon enough.
The problem is Oladipo.
Exactly.
That's the biggest problem.
Oladipo's and when he comes back in December, January is what they're projecting right now. When he does come back, there's going to take some time to get him back to the guy that
Definitely.
He was. So look at the Eastern Conference. It's in a pretty weak place. You can win 50 games and get to the NBA Finals because you're not going to run into that buzzsaw that you used to have here.
The buzzsaw is in the Raptors, you mean?
Yeah, the Raptors had the Celtics number. Look at the size differential in the way that the Raptors were able to manhandle the Celtics at times last year, especially after the acquisition of Marc Gasol last year. I mean, that was a team that not only did they have a killer, but they had such front court depth. They were just, matchup-wise, an impossible matchup for the Celtics. So that was a team that you worked to try to avoid. I was more comfortable with the Celtics last year playing the Bucks than playing the Toronto Raptors, if only because of the size differential between the two teams. I mean, the Celtics just weren't equipped to go head-to-head in a seven-game series with last year's Toronto Raptors.
So I was one of the people that didn't feel that way. I felt worse about them going against the Bucks
really?
Than I did against the Raptors.
Yeah, not me.
Well, now I'm trying to pull up their schedule because I remember there was one pretty significant win for the Celtics when they knocked off the Raptors. I don't know if Kawhi was out there. So they lost to them the first time, beat them the second time in overtime, beat them the third time,
yep.
lost to them the fourth time. So they went 2-2 against them throughout the course of the
they
season.
They did, and Kawhi missed two of those games.
And was so, that both the losses yeah, they were, for the Raptors?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So there's that part of it as well. And I know that if I'm Look wrong you. There, you guys are going to call me out on the 5-Out podcast and say Gilroy was wrong again. I'm just saying that, you know, it's an opinion thing. But all I'm saying is if I am taking the Celtics, and I'm taking the Sixers, and I'm taking the Milwaukee Bucks and putting them in a hat, I think that all three of those teams have a real puncher's chance at getting to the NBA Finals. So why not give it to the team that I hope gets there? I think they're all pretty much equal is what I'm saying. I don't think there's one overwhelming favorite. And I consider them pretty much equal because I think they're all going to win between 49 and 53 games. I don't think one team is going to win 60 games and be far and away, head and shoulders, record-wise, above the rest of the conference.
They will be close in the win total. And was it the Mike that called in?
Yep.
He said they're easily going to be over 50 wins for the Celtics. First of all, I'm stunned that I have the Celtics winning more games than Greeny. I thought he was ever – I know he gets – you know, he gets all frustrated with the free throws and everything, but he always seems like ever the optimist with the Celtics, and he said 49 wins,
He
right?
did say 49 wins.
I was stunned by that. I say 50, but it's like it could easily be 47 in my book, much more so than it could be 52. I think that you talked about how there are question marks with this team. Yes, the bottom of the East sucks. There are some good teams in the middle, though. The Magic are a team that gave the Celtics fits, right? We didn't see Vucevic. The Nets, I understand no one wants to say the Nets are going to be good, but they have another guy in Torian Prince who I think is lighting it up for him in the preseason.
Yep.
I know it's preseason, but he's a good player. The Pacers, yeah, fine. No Vic, I understand that. But they're not bumps. Like the middle of the road teams are going to create problems for the Celtics here and there. They will win the games they're supposed to. But when it comes down to it, I know you're talking bigger picture. when it comes down to it, the only way I see the Celtics being comfortably saying they will make the Eastern Conference Finals is if they're not playing one of those other two teams in the second round. If they're somehow the first seeded team or the that's the only way I see it.
Well, here's the other advantage the Celtics have against these other teams is they've got the ability now because they're set up so well contractually that if they've got a gaping need or if they feel like they're this close and they need to go acquire somebody. So if things don't go as planned and they need to make a wholesale change or if they need to make a tweak here and there, they've got enough guys under rookie contracts now that are on the 15-man roster, and they've got enough larger contracts, whether it's a guy like Jaylen Brown, who's now eligible to be traded, or a guy like Gordon Hayward, or even a guy with a mid-range type of contract like an Enes Kanter. They've got enough tradable assets in all areas of the spectrum, from young guys that you can package with a veteran's contract like a Gordon Hayward. So you take my Hayward contract, and I'll give you three young guys with high upside for your player. They can mix and match in a lot of different scenarios because of the flexibility on this roster. They've got big contracts, they've got small contracts, they've got guys with upside and potential, so they can really appease the needs of a good handful of teams out there that will have assets to potentially sell when the Celtics are at that point in the season where they're looking to see what weaknesses they have.
We know the weakness. We know what it's going to be. You already know what it's going to be.
It's going to be defense.
Low post particularly. They need to get a big guy in the middle of the year. And if they can move Kanter and package him with maybe a Langford if you're not feeling it, I wouldn't be opposed to that idea.
And I guess that's my point, is they can do that. They can mix and match contracts and essentially pinpoint and target a half a dozen guys to potentially fill their need and then look at the scenarios that those teams have and say, okay, this team needs young guys. We have that. This team is looking for a veteran contract. We have that. They can essentially make any general manager relatively happy and look pretty good with the packages that they're able to offer. No longer is this team looking at packaging all their young players to bring back a double-A type star. Those days are over.
Right.
But if you're considering this team in a weakened Eastern Conference, a potential finals team, and you need to make that tweak, I feel like they're in a better position than Philadelphia and a better position than Milwaukee to potentially make that tweak. And for me, that's why I give them the edge when it comes to getting to the finals. Those two teams may win more regular season games, but I feel like this Celtics team, they've got the potential to get to the finals, and if they're going to do it, this is a damn good year to do it without having that mega star here. I know that Glenn loves Giannis. He is a otherworldly type of player.
He is.
But he still has weaknesses in his game.
He does.
He's not a dependable three-point shooter. He showed sometimes in the playoffs last year he was capable.
Okay.
But that is a major weakness in today's NBA.
So I'm going to go on your side of this and say the one way. So now let's say they can beat the Sixers, right? Let's just say they somehow beat the Sixers, and they're facing the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep.
The one thing you brought up before, the team defense and everything, and how they were they did plenty fine before Horford came here defensively. The one thing that they will have going for them, let's just say they go at a big who can help down low, but they still don't have that guy who can stop Giannis. I think now that they have a group that they can work as one unit, where last year it was kind of like we're going to rely on Al to stop him, and if he can't do it, we're screwed, which we saw after the first game, ran into a lot of problems. Now that you're going to rely on everybody as one unit as opposed to one individual, that would put them in a better spot to handle Giannis, I believe. That's the only way, though. That's the only way they're going to beat them.
Up until 4 or 5 years ago, you could safely go with the assumption that the team with the best player was going to win a series. That's just not the case anymore. You've got teams with the best player seemingly losing series left and right in the NBA right now because there is a handful of guys at the top of the league. But those guys are no longer perfect players. They're not. LeBron James is the last sort of perfect type of player, a guy that was capable once upon a time of taking a guy named Boobie Gibson and dragging him to the NBA Finals. That's the stuff Michael used to do. That's the stuff LeBron could do. That's not Giannis. Giannis is a very good player, a great player, a potential Hall of Fame player. But he plays the game differently. He doesn't play the game with the ball in his hands full time like a Michael did, like a LeBron does. Those guys have the ability to control every aspect of the game because the ball is in their hands 80% of the time. They make all the decisions. A guy like Giannis, a guy like Embiid, they need other guys to help be playmakers and facilitate for them to be at their best.
But Giannis still has, I mean, he's still the drive and kick and everything. I mean, it's not like he's not like Joel Embiid.
No, but he's not polished either when it comes to drive and kick.
No, he's not as polished. No, he's definitely not. But I'm sure that's something he's working on in the course of things too. But Embiid and him are, to put them in the same sentence when we're talking about this stuff.
No, but everybody seems to be, because when you look at Philly and you look at Milwaukee and you say those are the two teams that are going to give the Celtics potential fits and prevent them from getting to the NBA Finals, they've mentioned those two guys because the Celtics don't have a defensive presence in the post, and those two guys are dominant post-type players.
Yep.
So, you know, they're relevant in that discussion, but you defend them very differently. You know, you absolutely
do. You have to. Yeah, absolutely. But I think that the thing that the Sixers promote, you're right. In terms of making moves, Celtics are in a better position than the Sixers are. No question about it. But right now, the way the caller before had said how, you know, length is always misconstrued or whatever in the league and how people talk about it. The length that the Sixers have and the athleticism that they have from top to bottom in that starting lineup, in that elite lineup, that's an issue. That you can't tell me that's not going to be a problem for the Celtics offense, too, in the course of things.
It absolutely could be. I'm not a big believer in Ben Simmons. I think he's a potentially a great player. He hit a three in the preseason. Everybody went nuts about it.
Yes,
but in the NBA today, you have to be able to shoot. Well, you just do. And can't shoot. Even if he can shoot better than he has in years past, he's still not going to be a dependable shooter this year. And if your point guard is essentially, I mean, I'm going to say Rondo. Rondo was shorter than Ben Simmons, not quite as dynamic, but Rajon Rondo was a liability out there with his inability to shoot. And when he left the Celtics and he was no longer able to lean on three future Hall of Famers, that weakness was exposed and his career really went in the wrong direction. You know, he was viewed as a potential Hall of Fame talent when he was here. There was talk about trading him for Chris Paul when Chris Paul was in his prime. That's where Rondo was in the hierarchy of NBA point guards.
He's got big balls!
But the moment he left here, he was never considered that type of player ever again because his weaknesses were exposed. Ben Simmons, his weaknesses will eventually be exposed. And I think Philadelphia, you know, we talk about them missing Jimmy Butler. They're also missing J.J. Redick.
Yeah.
And J.J. Redick hit some critical shots for that team in the playoffs over the years. That is a team that has always struggled to put the ball in the basket. And J.J. Redick was their one consistent threat from three, and he's no longer there.
For sure.
If you're trading out J.J. Redick and giving those shots to Ben Simmons, guess what? Celtics win. You know what I'm saying?
If Ben Simmons taking your threes, if you're relying on him to make any threes, you're screwed.
All right, it is Sports Radio, WEI, it's Gilroy, it's Nick Fryer, and more of your phone calls when we come back at 617-779-7937.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is Sports Radio, WEI. It's late night. Patrick Gilroy, Nick Fryer in studio here until 1 o'clock in the morning. Still some time and room for you guys at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. I'm a little distracted right now trying to keep an eye on Lakers-Clippers here because I took my eye off the game for a minute. And I was celebrating. Lakers were down 14. And then I turned around and the Lakers had tied the thing up. So yeah, they are a very talented team. I don't like them, but they're a very talented team. And I saw something I haven't seen in years in watching the NBA. And I saw Dwight Howard making an impact on a basketball court, making a positive impact. And
wow,
that was something that we haven't seen, Nick. I mean, this is a guy that he was with Washington last year. He was just a guy that was unable to get on the court at all. But he looks like a completely different human being.
He does.
He's still big, but he's not nearly as bulky and massive as he used to be.
No, he's not at all. It's in some ways concerning, I would say.
A little bit, right?
Yes.
But he's out there making a positive impact on a basketball court. And look, once upon a time, and it wasn't that long ago, he was the premier big man in the NBA. And now he had trouble finding an employer this offseason. So, you know, hopefully he's able to have a decent year and stick around. I never like it when these guys are forced out of the league prematurely. But he's in a position now where if things go well with the Lakers, he has the chance to resurrect his career. Now, things going well is critically important not only for Dwight Howard, but in my opinion, things going well is critically important for the Celtics head coach and Brad Stevens. And I say this because, and you and I touched on this a couple weeks ago, but, you know, Saved by the Bell, you got out of here and we didn't get to continue the conversation. But, you know, here's the thing. I'm a big Brad Stevens guy, right? And he's a guy that the Celtics were able to sort of play so far above their heads. Even his first year here, the Celtics were a bad basketball team. They won like 25 games. But that was a team that was entertaining to watch. They were fun to watch, and you could see the growth path that he had already set the team on.
Right.
And if you had told Doc Rivers when he was leaving Boston that because he was afraid of a rebuild, that you're only going to miss the playoffs that first year, so that was going to be the essentially the rebuild right there, maybe Doc would have wanted to stick around at that point.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? I think Doc was afraid of reliving his first half a dozen years here where they just weren't a playoff team consistently.
Yeah.
But this team, under the leadership and the direction of Brad Stevens, really they avoided that precipitous downfall that Doc was so afraid of. And you give all that credit to Brad Stevens, and rightfully so. But Brad Stevens is also a guy that's yet to prove that he's capable of coaching elite stars in the NBA. And he had one legitimate shot to do it last year, and it did not work. He had a precarious sort of locker room position that he was in, right? So he had to balance a few delicate flowers in that locker room last year, and it didn't go well. And if you read between the lines and you listen to things that not only Kyrie Irving, what he had to say, but also Marcus Morris, what he had to say, Terry Rozier, what he had to say, but also guys that are still here. Jaylen Brown expressed some frustration last year as well. There was definitely a lack of communication from the top down. And whether that was Brad Stevens' own insecurity or Brad Stevens simply not knowing the answers to these questions, for whatever reason, he didn't set the Celtics up to succeed last year. From day one, he was unable or unwilling to give his core players a direction, a role that they could believe in and buy into. There was so much insecurity and sort of question marks surrounding Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward last year. Who was starting? Why were they starting? How many minutes were you going to get? And I feel like in the NBA, especially if you're a team that considers yourself a quote-unquote contender, your top-tier talent, it's only fair that they've got legitimate sort of expectations that are put upon them by their head coach. You can't have – how many top-tier teams out there have their star player playing 40 minutes one night, 22 minutes the next night, 48 the next night, 19 the next night? Mm-hmm. And last year, the Celtics found themselves in that position far too often.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Brad Stevens, do you think he's learned from that mistake?
Oh, absolutely. He has. You have to have learned from that mistake, Gilroy. I mean, I don't see how you wouldn't. But the other thing is he was in such a unique situation, I think, with Kyrie. Because as much as I would say I defend Kyrie more than the average person does around here.
Scumbag.
Wow. There you go. But see, that's my point. I think that's how most people feel about him.
Right.
But I think that there were – and Mook said it the other day in New York that sometimes Kyrie's emotions were put ahead of the team. I think that was an issue for Brad, something that he's not so much used to, because the closest thing he had a star before Kyrie came in was Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas was thankful for every single thing he got here, pretty much, and Al Horford is as humble as can be.
Right.
So that's a huge jump for him for what he's used to. He didn't deal with that in college, obviously, because he wasn't dealing with the big-time names.
But he also had an issue with Rondo, and when you want to compare egos...
At the beginning of his coaching career.
Rondo's ego was on the same level as a Kyrie, right? Mm-hmm. Very much a prima donna, very much somebody that... They want everything to center around them.
And it didn't last long.
It didn't last long.
Right.
It sort of blew up, and the whole Kyrie thing blew up. I mean, not for nothing. Kyrie was a guy that a year ago was talking about being here for the remainder of his career, and things went south. Part of it going south has to fall on the shoulders of Brad Stevens. It does. And I feel like he has come out of last year virtually unscathed in the minds of Celtics fans. Not in the minds of NBA fans or NBA writers. I mean, he was a guy that was essentially year in and year out top five candidate for coach of the year. Last year, he didn't get one single vote. So he really took a hit position-wise last year as far as his status in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, if you and I were sitting here having this discussion, people were ranking him right up there next to Greg Popovich as elite NBA head coaches.
Right.
He's no longer considered in that class because of what happened last year. You have to prove that you're capable of handling big ego talent if you're going to stick around in the NBA and be a successful head coach for the long term.
I think that's a fair point, but I also think there are some guys who are catered specifically to just dealing with the big-time egos. I think Spoelstra, for all the crap that I remember giving him when he was with the Heat, he did an exceptional job with it. Now, LeBron runs the show, fine, whatever. Doc, I think, has done a good job with that for the most part throughout his career, although he only has one title to his name, right?
He does.
So that's another thing, too. I mean, he's only won once. And that Clippers team was supposed to be, you know, Lob City and everything. They were supposed to be the next big thing.
So here's the question. You've got yourself a legitimate NBA all-star here in Kemba Walker, but not your prototypical all-star sort of bitchy attitude, right? He doesn't have that.
It really is late night.
He's got an ego, but it's not the ego of a guy like you had here last year with Kyrie.
Right.
Right. And he's a better human being for all intents and purposes. Everybody that talks about him talks glowingly about him. So you've got an advantage there because I feel like he's somebody that's willing to be coachable, where Kyrie was not interested. He was the smartest man in the room at all times. Mm. He was not interested in learning from his coach last year. It's not who Kyrie Irving is. So that's going to be an advantage for Brad Stevens and the Celtics. But you brought up Doc Rivers, and I'm watching this Clipper game here, and I had this thought sort of run through my head last week when I was doing some show notes and some preparation. If things go well for this year's Celtics team, you've already got an established all-star in Kemba Walker. You've got a guy in Gordon Hayward that was an all-star and is certainly young enough to recapture that. You've got two young guys in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum that now Jaylen Brown is being paid like an all-star, and Jason Tatum, people consider a perennial future all-star. So that's four guys with real all-star-type egos and expectations put upon their shoulders. Would this Celtics team be more likely to compete in the playoffs and give themselves an opportunity to win a championship if Doc Rivers were here at this stage?
Ooh. I'm going to say no.
Why is that?
Because I think that the flaw is still the defensive end, and I don't necessarily think that I'm looking at Doc and saying he's going to go and turn this into some defensive stalwart team. I think that Brad is in a better position to do that. Because like you said, before Al was here, Brad was able to do that. I think that carries a little bit of weight.
He was, but I'm going to tell you right now, I appreciate that, by the way. I love everything that Brad did, but there's always been a handful of coaches in the NBA that have been capable of taking a young team and helping them sort of reach the next step in their progression to play above their heads. And really, that's what you do when you're rebuilding a franchise. You bring in a coach like that. It helps entertain the fans. It helps get your organization back on track. And then you hand it off when you're on the precipice of winning a championship to a guy capable of handling those egos.
Steve Kerr.
If at some point this year, if we're sitting here around the All-Star break and the Celtics are 500 and these guys have stalled out, you have to start having that conversation, because if Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have not shown their ability to take their next step in their progression and their sort of progression, their progress has stalled out again, now you're talking about a year last year, now a half a year this year with no progress, right? And you've just given Jaylen Brown $115 million and you've got to make a decision on Jason Tatum in the coming months. You got to make a change, and at that stage in the game, the change is not going to be the player.
You know what I'm most blown away by in all this, Gilroy, is that you have these concerns with Brad Stevens.
I do.
Yet at the same time,
they're going to the finals.
They're going to the finals.
It's bizarre.
And then OMF is going to get hung up on the latter of the 2 points that I just brought up, as opposed to the former.
Of course they are. Yes. It's my job to give them content. I'm all over the place. They can pick and choose and take my words, twist them however they want.
We do on Five Out, too.
That is my role here in the station. I've learned to embrace it. It is Sports Radio, WEI. When we come back, we'll wrap this thing up, get a few closing thoughts on the Celtics as they really get going later on tonight. It is a officially after midnight. It is officially game day.
Woo!
And the Celtics open up their regular season. That was really high-pitched. I like that. Did the girls on the other podcast that you do teach you that? Lucy and Elaine.
Gordon Hayward just
hit the game winner. We'll go to commercial. We'll come right back. We're going to talk about Gordon flipping Hayward.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Final segment here. Late Night Sports Radio WEI. It's been fun getting back into legitimate NBA conversation, legitimate Celtics talk. I'm sure that there'll be snippets of this show taken out of context and plaster all over the place here. And, you know, Nick, I bring him in the studio. I see him in the hallway. I what's up, buddy? I almost consider him a friend. And then he burns me on the 5-0 podcast every time. He doesn't stand up and say, you know what, guys, that's my guy. That's Gilroy. Don't take him out of context. He invites them to take me out of context.
Okay.
Officially after midnight, it is officially game day.
So, I said that I love you on the show.
You did.
And we are friends.
Yes.
And the thing is, now Matt and I reacted to the sound that Tyler gave us. And I will continue to throw Tyler under the bus like I did on Twitter, like I did when we texted. That was him who caught up the sound. And based on what I heard, you can understand why I had that reaction, because I know how you feel about Horford.
Yes. So Tyler has got a history with me where he's a good guy. He's been good to me. Tyler, I'm happy to do OMF whenever you ask me to. But Tyler has historically set me up for Lou Maloney to knock me down. All right. That's been an ongoing theme for Tyler since he's taken over that show. So now I feel like, and it's one thing when Lou knocks me down, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Nick, this is no disrespect to you, but now he's setting me up for Nick Fryer to knock me down. And I'm thinking to myself, how much lower can I go here? Like, I'm just at the bottom of the barrel here, getting knocked down left and right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much the bottom of the barrel here, so.
No. That's, no.
You've hit rock bottom, Gilroy, I would say.
So real quick, I know we got to get out of here in a minute, but there's you know, two guys here that I feel like we haven't touched on, and we're not going to give them the proper time. But the Celtics have got two guys nobody talks about that I feel like will have an impact at some point this season. Tell me if you agree. Carson Edwards and Javonte Green. I feel like both will have an impact on winning at some point this season. They'll both carve out roles.
The fact that Danny Ainge looks at Javonte as a Tony Allen type.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yep.
But I don't know. This year, though, I don't know. Carson Edwards absolutely is going to have an impact for sure. He's in that rotation right now from day one.
Does he have an IT ceiling?
I think that's a pretty fair comp.
Isn't that?
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to say Eddie House, but it's like, I think he's more
than
that.
There's more IT. He can get to the hole. Eddie House, great shooter.
He can get to the hole.
He can get buckets. So both those guys, I feel like, will have an impact. We'll start to see that impact potentially as soon as tomorrow night the Celtics open up their season. We'll know a lot more about this team in 72 hours. Sixers tomorrow night, Toronto on Friday. For Nick Fryer, my name is Patrick Gilroy. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow night at 10. Until then, bye-bye.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.